Welcome aboard, space travelers. Please lower your harness and keep your hands and arms inside the vehicle at all times. Prepare for blast off.
And welcome to the October episode of That Disneyland Paris podcast with myself, Nick.
And myself, Paul.
I almost called myself Paul. What? Why? Why? Why was he going to do that?
It's because it's the two Ronnies. It is. It's good night from him and it's good night from you.
Yeah. Maybe we'll start the new year with a new opener. Maybe that's how we get around that. I don't know. But we're not alone, and I mean, it's not very often that we have guests on the podcast, and it's always good to get guests on, especially listeners to the podcast. So we are joined by Kieran.
Hi, guys. Great to be on the podcast. Been listening for a long time now, so, well, last 2 years or so. So it's great to actually speak to you both.
Yeah, well, you've been quite... interactive, I'd say, in terms of our listeners. We know we get like the odd message from people, but you are somebody who, you know, I got to kind of recognize your name because of like how often you would comment on things, and you know, I love any interaction, but it's always nice when you get kind of like repeat interaction. So you know, we're grateful for that, so thank you.
Yeah, I do a bit of work on social media, so I've always got my computer on, so whenever something pops in my head from the podcast, I always just try and interact.
So a question that I love to ask people whenever I speak to listeners, whether that's on a podcast or outside of a podcast, is like, how did you discover us? Because, you know, if there's one thing about podcasts, and, you know, I started podcasting in 2012, so back when... you know, no one knew what podcasting was pretty much. But, you know, there's lots of Disney podcasts. How did you find this one?
I don't think there's many Disneyland Paris podcasts. So I used to listen to the one with, I forgot his name now. Can't think of their names, but they were on the go for a few years.
Would it have been Mark and...
Peters, that's right, yeah.
Mark Peters, yes. And Steve.
And Steve, that's it, yeah. Steve, yeah. Riley, yeah. So I listened to them for, when they were on the air, if you like, and I just randomly searched for other Disneyland Paris podcasts, and I came across you guys.
Well, I think, if I remember correctly, Paul, I think we'd been kind of kicking the can around on doing... more Disneyland Paris content separately, because if there was one thing we noticed, if we ever did Diz After Dark and it was quite a Disneyland Paris themed episode, it would normally be like downloaded a lot less for some reason.
It was a very strange situation, because at that point when we were doing that, I'd kind of become a regular at Disneyland Paris. At that point, I was an annual pass holder. I was going 2-3 times a year, we just felt like it was time to talk about it. And obviously we knew Mark and Steve, we'd had interactions with them on multiple occasions before the changes happened to that show. And it just so happened that we came along with this show just as they decided to pass it over and give up, really.
I would say, if anything, it spurred us into doing it, because those guys were great. And not that you can't compete, because, you know, there's lots of different like theme park podcasts, and, you know, you've got UOP and we have Universal After Dark and stuff. But, you know, when people like do it so well, you do kind of not get intimidated, but think, is it worth us doing it? Is our voice any more important? But I would definitely say them kind of jacking that in certainly kind of inspired us to go, well, now's as good a time as any. You know, there is definitely a gap there, because I think you're right, Kieran. Like there are other, obviously, Disneyland Paris podcasts out there, but you know, theirs was the most engaging, I think. I certainly found. So if that's gone, well, you know, we better do something. And yeah, it's a shame when stuff like that happens, but you know, sometimes things change and you don't want to do it. And as yeah, you're right, Paul. I mean, at that time, I was going multiple times, you were going multiple times, and it just seemed to be a good time to do it. And then I started writing a book, which is still unpublished. So that's that was another reason to start doing this podcast. It's still sitting on a computer. No, that's interesting. But you mentioned to us, was it August or September that you had this trip incoming? And that you hadn't been for a long time. So when do you think you last went to Disneyland Paris?
I'm guessing it was probably around Christmas time, 2012 or 2013.
Wow.
Or maybe 2014, that sort of time. I should check, really. But yeah, it was a good long time ago. My daughter was very small. I mean, she's in university now, so that tells you the time span. but we had been to Disney World in Florida in 2017, myself and my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But actually Disneyland Paris itself, I was actually probably like podcasts like yourselves and the other podcasts you mentioned. I mean, they were I didn't really have any plans to go back to Disneyland Paris until listening to podcasts like this, because I think you guys sort of showed how much was on offer by going to Disneyland Paris.
Which is funny, because I would say that we also get moaned at for being too negative at times. And look, we're spurring people to go. So you can put that in your pipe and smoke it. So Kieran, I mean, am I wrong to assume that you are from Wales originally?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, still living in Wales.
Okay. So Disneyland Paris, I suppose, is still geographically the nearest park for you to go to. But I guess, like, it's like, you know, coming from Wales, probably not the easiest part to get to.
Just to give the listeners a rough idea, it probably takes, from where I live, about 6 hours to get to Dover. Okay. 5-6 hours. And then obviously whatever the drive is. I've always driven to Disneyland Paris as well. I mean, I've been about 5 or 6 times with my daughter, my partner, a long time ago. So it's 5-6 hours to Dover and whatever it is on the French side then.
But I know as well that this wasn't what we would kind of like consider to be like a standard Disneyland Paris trip. Like you said, you went by car, and we've obviously done episodes about, you know, the various ways of getting to Disneyland Paris. But you were not staying on site.
No, well, I wasn't actually going by car either, really. I actually took my camper van.
Wow.
So initially when I was planning to go, well, I wasn't even planning to go to Disneyland Paris, to tell you the truth. I was actually planning to go to the Rugby World Cup. And the friends I was maybe going with, they couldn't go in the end. And then it just got quite complicated and difficult to go just because of the costs by yourself. And I was actually planning to go to the Somme as well, you know, the World War I cemeteries and memorials, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So when the rugby side of things sort of fell through, I was sort of thinking, right, I'm going to go to the Somme area. And when I just looked at the map, I realized how close that actually was to Paris. And I thought, well, I've always wanted to go back to Disneyland Paris. I thought this was the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I brought my camper van. But I say it's a camper van. It's a Volkswagen Transporter, so a small camper van.
Mm-hmm.
And I travelled down to Dover through the night. So I was in Dover about 4 in the morning. Travelled across to France, then drove down to Disney. I mean, the drive itself was easy, very easy to drive. I mean, I've driven in France in the past, but this is the first time driving by myself in France. And it was a very easy drive. The only thing to bear in mind is if, when you come to the toll booths, they're only on the left-hand side of the vehicle. So you've got the option then of either clambering across the seats or physically getting out of the seat and walking around, which is what I did in the end. I found it easier than trying to clamber across with all bits and bobs on the seat. And when I got to, well, when I was planning the trip, I was just basically looking for the cheapest possible accommodation. And I was looking at just cheap hotels. I think I might have asked you guys or various websites and forums about cheap accommodation. And someone said, why don't you stay in the area for campervans in Disneyland Paris, which I didn't know existed. So basically, they got an area down the bottom of the car park where you can pay €40 and stay in the car park, if you like, in your campervan. Yeah, so that's what I did. I paid my €40, and you've got to pay €40 every day then that you stay there.
Wow.
But I just want to point out as well, just make your listeners aware, which is a mistake I made, there is no facilities there. I think in the past, what people have done, they've used the coach driver's facilities for showering and, you know, toilet and that type of thing. But they were under renovation when I was there. So I turned up very hot, sweaty and tired, looking forward to a shower, and there was no shower there to be had.
Ugh. I mean, I've got to be honest. I mean, I knew that people took camper vans there, but I wasn't aware that there was like an on-site like parking area essentially for them.
Yeah, it's just a car park. It's nothing fancy. So, I mean, if you go in with, you know, your kids for a first-time magical experience, it's probably not the option because you are literally in a car park. It is actually a multi-story. It looks and feels like a multi-story car park because they got, I think solar panels above the car park. So you're totally enclosed as well and just like surrounded by concrete. So it's not really magical in that respect. But for me, I just wanted somewhere to be close to the park, and you are literally 5-10 minutes walk from the park. I'm cheap, and that was by far my cheapest option. But like I said, you don't have showers. So, I mean, I did. I think I might have actually put on your Facebook group asking, did anyone know about showers in Disney? So what I did in the end, once I sort of realised there wasn't going to be, there was no shower facilities there directly for me, I went for a walk around all the hotels with my towel and shower things with me. And a cast member kindly turned a blind eye when I used one of the showers there.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm not going to say the hotel because I don't want to get anyone in trouble or anything. But
no,
they must have felt sorry for me. I must have looked very hot and sweaty and uncomfortable. So I probably smelled a little bit as well. So they probably let me use the shower facilities.
Yeah, because I think I said to you, and I didn't realize that that's what those facilities were for the coach drivers, but we found those in the car park, and we drove overnight once, and that's what we used. But yeah, it's a bit poor for them to not have an alternative. You know, obviously if they've got to do renovations and stuff, they've got to do it. You know, it's fine, but to not have like an alternative plan in place is a bit poor.
Yeah, I think they do actually say clearly on their website, if you look at the small print, that you've got to be totally self-sufficient. So if you don't show facilities and toilets and that type of thing. So they do cover themselves in that respect. But no, we would have thought a big, massive billion-dollar company like Disney could put up a shower block. But no, it was what it was. I mean, it didn't spoil the trip or anything, but it would have made things a lot easier if they had a shower block. And just also, when I inquired about it, by the sounds of it, they're not gonna be having any shower facilities in the future, even the coach drivers. So just bear that in mind if anyone is looking at taking a camper van to Disneyland Paris.
Well, P-Dubs, get the petition started. That's what I say. let's make our voices heard.
Yeah, that's a very strange situation, especially with the coach drivers. With the amount of coach parties, especially from the UK, that seems like an absolutely awful decision.
Yeah, because you see, I mean, personally, I would never do it. Like, I don't think I could do it, go on one of these very long coach trips. I know you have.
Well, I did. The first time I went was on one of the coach parties. Can't remember really, which company it was.
The thing is, they are really cheap. Like, I get why people do them. I just, like, for me, I can't think of anything more headache. Like, I don't like to be on a coach for hours at a time anyway. And the way that generally those coach trips go, you know, they're normally like half a day because various stops. Sometimes you have to change to a different coach at a service station and, you know, all that stuff. I just, no.
Yeah,
not
and the one we did when we came back, it was overnight as well. And we got back into our city centre at about 4:30 in the morning. And had to find our way home. Because obviously we'd not taken a car or anything to get us there. And we were expecting to be back at like 6:30 and we'd jump on the bus and we'd be back. No, 4:30 in the morning.
So. I wonder if, like, I don't, obviously, like, it doesn't matter now because the trip's done. But I do wonder, because obviously, you know, Davy Crockett is considered a bit of a, not campgrounds, but it's a completely different setup to the rest of the hotels. It's like lodges and stuff. I wonder if there's anything there that you can, that allows that kind of thing.
Yeah, I just think after traveling, bear in mind, I was actually on the Saturday before I went, I was working on, I'm involved in boxing. So I was at a boxing show in Cardiff. So I didn't even bother going home. I went straight from the boxing show straight to Dover, then straight from Dover down to Paris. So, I mean, I've been traveling for, I don't know, 20 odd hours at this point. So I was, and also I set my camper van up. I hadn't realized until I'd actually set the van up, you know, moved the seats around, and got everything in position, that there was no showers available. So what, I mean, I was considering at one point whether to try and get the train into the local town, whatever it's called, try and use like a local swimming pool or something.
Out of Europe, do you mean?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I mean, I think I asked the question on some of the Facebook forums, and a few people suggested that. But at that point, I'd travelled enough, I think.
Yeah.
And I was just going to take my chance on trying to just blag my way into one of the hotels, which is what I did in the end.
I had, that reminds me of, we had our bathroom done a few years ago, like complete renovation. And it meant that there was like going to be no toilet for about 3 or 4 days. So I had to like kind of strategically plan everything I could do. So I couldn't wash, I couldn't shower or anything like that. So it was a combination of going to my local shopping center and using their toilets there and going to the local leisure center for the exact same reason you just spoke of there, paying like my £4, whatever it was to get in, and then just jump in the showers.
Yeah, but I'd say it's definitely an option if people are traveling past in their camper van. It's definitely an option if you just want one or two nights.
I know other people that have done I don't know if they've done camper van trips, but definitely done camping trips. And I do know that there are some campsites near to Disneyland Paris, but I mean, I think like 15-20 minutes away.
Yeah,
so still, I mean, not as close as you were.
Yeah, I mean that was one of my other options, was staying with the local campsites, but like you said, there was around 20 minutes, half an hour, which again, it would just mean driving in the French traffic, which I was trying to avoid if I could.
Yeah.
But just something as well for the listeners, that when you are staying on the camping area, if you can call it that, each day you've got to book your next night, if you like, in the dog sit-in area. You know, where they drop the dogs off.
Okay.
So I mean, if you want to book another night, you just got to go there in the morning to book the second night. You don't like book three nights consecutively. You just book it night by night.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I'd never even thought of that. But then, you know, that's you know, a different kind of trip. So it's something that I've not experienced, and I wouldn't have the. I don't even own a tent anymore. I'm not going to a campground soon. So, funny enough, we were just talking about tents the other day for that reason. It was like, well, we used to have a tent, but we don't have a tent anymore. But yeah, I mean, I guess that is another you know, way of doing a Disneyland Paris holiday. We've talked about staying on site. We've talked about staying, you know, in surrounding areas like Val d'Europe at the hotels. But yeah, you can stay in a camper van. You can stay in a tent if you want to. There are places you can do.
Yeah, there's no tent facilities within the Disneyland Paris grounds. So it's only the
I meant off site.
Yeah.
I like some. I wouldn't like
the thought of someone turning up with their family, looking to pitch their tent somewhere and finding just concrete.
They'd be all right. They can just do it on Main Street.
Yeah,
wouldn't make any difference.
Sometimes, that's for sure. Okay, so you went for how many days in total?
Well, I had a 3-day pass.
Mm-hmm.
The day I arrived was around, I don't know, 2-3 o'clock. I can't really remember what time it was exactly, the time I sorted myself out. But the first evening I was there, actually some of the tips I had off your show, actually, when I asked you about things to do in the evening.
Mm.
So, I mean, I spent that first evening just wandering around the different hotels and the different, just looking at the Disney Village area they got there.
Yeah.
No, so I really enjoyed doing that, actually, because I've stayed in the Cheyenne many moons ago. So it was nice just to wander on there. I wandered up by the Sequoia Lodge, is it called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed doing that evening. It was really hot weather, really nice, really good atmosphere. So for that first evening, I just wandered around, and then there was a rugby game on that. Well, Wales were playing at, I think it was 9 o'clock, so I just watched that. I watched the game in the sports bar. They got a big, massive screen there. So if anyone likes sport, it's the ideal spot to watch anything. So that was my first evening, which was really enjoyable, a really good first evening in the park. Well, it wasn't even in the park, outside the park.
No, but it, you get a good atmosphere, and especially, I mean, obviously you were there when the World Cup, Rugby World Cup was on. But I've been there when me and Craig went last year, it was the Football World Cup, because obviously they moved it because of where it was being held. And we one afternoon we saw one of the games there while we were sitting in the Sequoia Lodge bar. But if you go into the video, I mean the sports bar will show football live anytime it's on. So obviously because of when they play games, you know, a lot of nights you will see like a local French game on big screen. And, you know, if it's one of the or a couple of the big teams playing, you get a really good atmosphere there, I think.
Yeah, definitely was a really good atmosphere for the games. I watched, you know, throughout the days I was there, I watched 3 or 4 rugby games, quite a lot of football as well, like local football and European football.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice spot to have a coffee or a beer or whatever, or just to watch the world go by.
Yeah, no, I think it's underrated, and I think if we've got any women listeners that are struggling to get their husbands to go to Disneyland Paris because it's full of kiddie stuff, that's a good tactic. Is say, well, look, there's a sports bar. They show you live football all the time. You know, you can just go and plonk yourself there while we go and do other stuff. So.
Yeah, with one of the biggest screens I've ever seen in my life as well, probably.
It's a huge screen above the sports bar, isn't it? Or in that kind of like kind of gap in between the buildings. Yeah, it's massive. But yeah, the hotel's a great tip. I mean, but it's something I normally do of a daytime. But it doesn't really matter because you're inside buildings. But you know, I think it's always nice to go and check out those hotels and maybe get some inspiration for future trips. And even if not, it's just nice to see what they do in there and the different shops and the different restaurants and the different bars. You know, they've all got their own kind of unique character and personality about them.
Yeah, the Sequoia Lodge, that is a nice wooden area, like a decking area as well on the first floor. So I was able to actually get a beer and go sit in that decking area with all the trees around me. That was a really nice sort of spot. Oh. If anyone's looking for somewhere just to have a relax.
I've never gone at a time when you've been able to do that. So it's been too cold.
No, and I want to say we can't guarantee that will still be there in 18 months' time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a big shame.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll talk about that on a future show. But there's been some hotel development. No, that's good. It sounds like a nice kind of introduction to your stay. So did you spend 2 days going around the parks?
Well, I had tickets for 3 days. I presumed very wrongly that due to the fact it was the end of September, the British children were in school. I just presumed that the parks were going to be very quiet. And I had the sort of shock of my life when I wandered in about 10 o'clock, a half hour after opening, after paying for my ticket for the next night, how busy the parks were. And just the parks were just absolutely jammed the whole time.
So what days did you go?
Well, it was the 24th of September was the day I arrived. That was the Wales-Australia game. So the 25th and 26th and 27th were the days I had tickets.
Okay, yeah, so like it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah, which is the reason I picked those days. But I think when I had a look online, I think someone said it was Spanish school holidays, perhaps.
Right.
And there was people there as well from the Rugby World Cup. There's a lot of Irish people there, a lot of English and Scottish who maybe wouldn't have normally been there. They were all there in their rugby shirts, so that's why I'm presuming they were rugby fans.
It's interesting as well, because that's just after the weekend, which would normally be Run Disney weekend.
Yeah.
And I know quite a lot of people that still went, despite the fact there is no race weekend anymore.
Yeah, maybe it was that as well.
it's not going to change. They're not coming back, people. Don't get that in your head. It isn't coming back.
Hang on. I know why you've said that. I know why you've said that, because you know the day after this episode gets published publicly, there'll be an announcement of race weekends for next year. I know what you're doing.
There won't be a race weekend until they finish rebuilding these hotels. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's probably a
I think that probably had an effect as well, because I know last year I went that weekend, despite the fact that there was no race weekend. And I do know a few of my friends from the running circles still went this weekend. So that may have had a knock-on effect as well.
Yeah. It's hard, isn't it, Kieran? So no, it's not too hard to find out when kids are on holiday here. Or roughly because of, obviously, being a parent. But the European holidays are a complete mystery. And I think the European school holidays, a bit like the American school holidays, finish a bit earlier than ours do. So our kids normally go back like the first week of September, but I think they go back around the middle or the third week of August, which is probably why they had that holiday then rather than, like a few weeks later.
Yeah, well, whatever the reason was, it sort of changed my plan of attack, if you like, on how I was going to approach things. My plan was just to do the quiet rides first, and then do the busier ones later on in the day or in the evening. But just was so, everything was just so crowded. I just thought, right, every time I just come to an attraction I want to do, I'm just going to do it, a queue up, and that's what I did basically. I think it was Thunder Mountain might be in the first attraction I went on, and I think I was like an hour queue maybe. And that was like 10 o'clock in the morning. And then Phantom Manor and so forth. But I just thought I'm going to be queuing for a long time, so there's no point trying to dodge the queues. So I just bit the bullet and just jumped in the queue as I went along.
Yeah. Well, obviously there are some attractions that have like the single rider. But a lot of those attractions don't, do they?
Yeah, well, that's a thing as well. The times that were getting posted for the attractions, they were all out by about 10 minutes. To the worst, like if it said it was half hour, then the reality would be maybe 40 minutes or 45 minutes. And when I inquired about that on one of the Disney Facebook groups, I was told, well, actually, my post is deleted by one of the admins because they said that doesn't happen. And I was like, well, okay, but well, it did on this trip.
It does every trip. I can't remember the last time I've ever had an accurate wait time.
Yeah.
For anything. I mean, that's I think when I went last year, I remember going on the Avengers Flight Force attraction, what used to be Rock and Roller Coaster. And I think it said like a 5-minute wait. And I literally walked onto the ride. The 5-minute queue was because that's how long it took you to walk around the queue.
But when I was there, the queues are actually a lot longer than the post this time.
No, I mean, we did, the counter to that was we did Spider-Man, and I think it said it was a 45-minute wait, and we left the queue probably about 30 minutes into it, having moved about 30 people. There was clearly a thing wrong. I'm sure there was clearly a problem, and that's why there was a delay. But even when we left, the wait time had gone up, I think, to like 55 minutes. And I was like, there's no way that queue was 55 minutes. Like, we was queuing all the way near the entrance to it. Like, this is just impossible. Yeah. So it's not a Disney problem. It is a problem that I see in everything part that I go to be fair. But wait times have to be taken with a pinch of salt, because more often than not, they're not accurate. Sometimes it's shorter, sometimes it's longer.
But it was just consistently across the whole park that the times were out, by about a third or a quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was. It didn't spoil. Once I realised that was the case anyway, there's nothing I could do about it. Anyway, I had plenty of time. So I just made my way around the various attractions. Just trying to think of some of the standout ones. I mean, Hyperspace Mountain, that was the first time I've been on that attraction since it changed over from Space Mountain. I really enjoyed that, but I did feel that it was done slightly on the cheap, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
The Star Wars theming could have been a little bit more.
I'm an apologist to the attraction.
Nick's the one that loves this attraction.
Well, I love the coaster itself, and I really enjoyed it, but I just felt it could have been so. I mean, the Star Wars universe, that's what it's called. There's so much things they could have put in there and have done it so much better for probably not that much extra money, but it just seemed like they went for the cheap option, but just with the screens.
Yeah, I went on it the first year it was open. I've not been on it since, because it's just not worth the queue line anymore.
Yeah, I mean, look, I won't lie. I'm not queuing more than 30 minutes for that attraction. I like it, but not to that extent. And
bring back from the earth to the moon.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, to your point, Kieran, it was done on the cheap because it was supposed to be a temporary refurb. They'd done this at some of the other Disney parks with their Space Mountains, and they were, 3 to 6 month, conversions, which would then go back to the original attraction afterwards.
Meant to celebrate the reopening of Star Tours.
Right, exactly. So this was supposed to be like a temporary, 6 months, maybe to a year tops, and it hasn't gone back. And I think for me, I didn't like Mission 2. I never liked Space Mountain Mission 2. I liked the original Space Mountain, which, as Paul said, was like the Earth to the Moon. And if I had the option of having Star Wars, themed to Star Wars or themed back to the original, then I would absolutely want it reverted back to the original. As it stands, I'd rather have this and Mission 2, but that's quite a low bar. But my biggest problem with the attraction is what it looks like from the outside. Because
looks like nothing like Star Wars, is it, from the outside? It looks like Jules Verne or whatever it's called.
Because that's what the attraction was supposed to be. And so, everything before you kind of, have like the first, you have the launch and then you kind of drop down, is Jules Verne inspired. And then you start seeing Star Wars stuff inside it, and I give it that pass because I like Star Wars, I like the music, and I like the actual, the actual coaster itself. I think it's a good coaster, but for me, if you're going to keep it, change the building and make it better themed inside as well, or revert it back. Like, yeah. And also as well, like, it's not an attraction unless it's like a really busy part day, like when you were there. It's not an attraction that has horrendous wait times. Like, if you're there on an average day, you'll get attractions that have, you know, hour-long queues or 90-minute queues. But Space Mountain's not one of them.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a busy attraction on an average day. That's only busy on a day where you've got so many people that, you know, almost every attraction's got a wait time, you know?
Yeah. But I will say, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm being negative, but I still absolutely love the attraction. And when the Star Wars music came on and you know, you're flying around and you're the Star Wars noises, if you like, as you're going around on the coast, and it was still a brilliant experience. It's just like I said, it just feels you could have done it a little bit better. But I mean, it's the only small sort of first world problems, as they say.
Yeah. Did you, so I'm just trying to think in Discovery Land, since you last went, you would have had Star Tours 2, and also PhilharMagic.
I went on the Star Tours ride straight after Space Mountain, because that was another one of the attractions that was like a must-do attraction.
Mm.
So I just went on there, queued up, and I really enjoyed that. That was brilliant. You know, and I actually went, when I come off that attraction, the line was down to something like 15 minutes. It was posted as, and I just went straight back on it. So now you have the different screens in there.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that. I mean, that was brilliant. And then another good thing, I guess you guys know anyway, that you had the stormtroopers out mingling with the crowd.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I mean, I thought that was really good. Like, I was there by myself. And it's just another thing for you, your listeners. I mean, this was a solo trip, so I was there by myself. So I was just there by minding my own business, drinking a coffee. And I could see one of the stormtroopers just slowly making his way over to me. And I said, he's not going to talk to me now, is he? And he had like children following behind him. And then the stormtrooper comes over to me and asks me what I'm doing. Have I seen the rebels or something or other? So I had this conversation with the stormtrooper, drinking my coffee, trying to mind my own business. But I mean, but that was great. I mean, it was just excellent. Just the theme. And I mean, that's the difference between Star Wars, I suppose, and other theme parks.
Yeah.
Disney and other theme parks.
Yeah, and the thing is, things like that are completely luck of the draw. Because I've met Star Wars characters there, because they have like the meet and greet area where you can meet, you know, Darth Vader or Chewbacca or whoever. But things like the Stormtroopers, or, you know, sometimes you'll see the Mandalorian, you just have to be there at the right place at the right time. Like, there's no kind of rhyme or reason to it necessarily. You either see it or you don't. So I've never had that experience at Disneyland Paris.
Okay.
It's really cool that you have.
Yeah, it was really good. It was just like one of those sort of instantaneous moments. It wasn't planned or anything. It was just like you said, luck of the draw, really.
So I guess, just thinking about the attractions that you spoke about before as well. So both Big Thunder Mountain and Phantom Manor would have had upgrades to them since your last visit. So how are your experiences on those?
Brilliant. Yeah, Thunder Mountain, absolutely amazing. I've always loved Thunder Mountain anyway, so it was just as good as it's always been, if not better. Just absolutely loved it. Phantom Manor, I don't know why, but I was expecting it to be looking slightly dated, perhaps, just because of all the animatronics. And that was absolutely amazing as well. I mean, it was absolutely brilliant. It was even better than I was expecting it to be. Absolutely loved that attraction.
It still surprises me every time I get on it.
Yeah.
I mean, every time. And I sit there and I go, well, I've seen that before, but why does it feel so new? It still feels fresh every time I get on that ride. I think that's the reason why it stands out above the two Haunted Mansions.
Yeah, that's right. I agree totally. It just felt as if it had just been opened that particular day and everything looked brand new on it. But it did to me anyway. It just looked so new and fresh and vibrant.
Well, the last refurbishment, I think, Paul, was what, 2019, 2018?
Something like that. The year, because the year we did the Run Disney, Pirates had just opened, hadn't it? After its refurb, and which was
2017.
2017. So I think Haunted Mansion was down the following year.
Yeah. So maybe 2019 it reopened then. Yeah, it must have done, because I went on it that year. When we went for Halloween. So yeah, that would make sense. So you know, it was refurbed 4 years ago. And you know, I did it last November, and it, like you say, Kieran, it still looked like it had just, you know, been done up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's weird. Like the attractions you can go on and see, like the animatronics look a bit dated and stuff like that. You don't get that there. I don't know if they spend extra time maintaining that attraction or whatever, but it does always look really good. But to your point, Paul, I think, I think it's because there's so much to see.
Yeah.
Like, I've done it so many times, but I feel the same as you, that sometimes I think, I'm not sure if I've seen that before, but I obviously have. But yeah, I think there's just a lot going on.
Yeah, and I think the lighting in there helps as well, because there is a lot of changing light elements. So sometimes you might go past something and you won't see it because it's not lit up. But then the next time you go on it, you'll catch a different set of lights, and you spot something. And there is a lot of kind of showy elements to that ride, especially now with the update. Obviously, the bride right at the start, is very showy, and you've got other elements throughout the ride. And I think that does help. And the thing is, for me, I haven't seen Disneyland's Haunted Mansion properly for nearly 15 years, because every time I go on it, it's the Christmas one. So I think that's probably what helps Phantom Manor stand out for me as well.
Yeah, that it has, it's, yeah, the proper story, the original story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you split your park days up into the parts? So like the first day, did you kind of concentrate solely on Disneyland Park?
Yeah, that was the plan to do. My rough plan was going into the Disney, like the Magic Kingdom Park, if you like, on the first day.
Yeah.
Do the Studios Park, or half the Studios Park on the second day, and then go back into the Magic Kingdom Park in the evening. And then on the third day, my plan was just spend the morning just doing a few of my sort of favorite attractions.
Yeah.
But
a good plan of attack.
Yeah, well, I mean, except that by the third day, it was just so crowded, I'd realised that I probably wasn't going to get more than one or two attractions done. It was just so crowded. So I actually didn't even bother going in on the third day, just because I'd done all the attractions I really wanted to do. And I had other places to go as well. So I just decided to cut my losses on the third day, just because of the crowd more than anything.
Wednesday's a funny day anyway, because Wednesday is like a half day in France.
Right, okay.
So it always... So the morning's not normally too bad, but, you know, after lunchtime, it does get a lot busier.
Yeah, well, on the second day when I went in, my plan was to do the Spider-Man ride, because that was new to me. But all that area was new to me in the studio park. But I'm not really a Marvel fan as such, so a lot of it was probably wasted on me. But I will say it was a great area, and no doubt people who do like Marvel think it's absolutely amazing, because it's really well themed. The Spider-Man ride was good, but it's probably I wouldn't rush to go on it again, because it is just all screens, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the what's the rock and roller coaster, the Avengers?
Flight Force, yeah.
Flight Force, sorry, yeah. That, I mean, I really enjoyed that coaster. Still an excellent coaster, but just a similar gripe to the Space Mountain one, where it just felt like it's done slightly on the cheap. Or as if they could have achieved a hell of a lot more by spending probably not, you know, a relatively small amount of money. But it was still an excellent coaster. I absolutely loved it. And if the queue hadn't been so big, I'd have probably gone straight back on it. So, I mean, that says it all, really.
Yeah, because, I mean, that is an attraction which is often has like a really small wait time. Like, again, when I was there last November, I think the highest I saw it advertised that was about 15 minutes.
Well, actually, I'll pull you up on this then, because I actually remember in that queue for probably near an hour thinking, I'm sure those guys on that podcast said this yeah. should be a very short queue.
But it's, every time I go, I don't think it's because of, like, you know, going out of season. Like, I often just, because if I, you know, unless I'm doing like a family trip, and then you're obviously constrained to, you know, school holidays or, you know, anything like that. But, you know, when we went last November, it was like in the middle of November or towards the end of November. There were no holidays for any of Europe, the UK, anything like that. It was just three random days. And it's and the thing that surprised me the most about that attraction, whenever I see it like that, is I think, why do they like bother with it? Because no one seems to care about this attraction, even though I like it. But, you know, but your testament to that, you know, on a busy day, it does get a proper queue. I think the problem with both Space Mountain and with Flight Falls is that because they're proper coasters, and by that I mean, you know, they're you know really fast, and you know you've got inversions and you know cobra rolls and I don't want to say loop the loop. That sounds like such an old fashioned phrase, but Paul, what's the correct term for a loop the loop?
I'm just trying to think. I can't. Do you know, the only thing I ever get in my head now is helix.
Helix. Yeah, let's call it a helix. But, you know, with stuff like that, because of how fast those trains are going, anything that you're supposed to see, you are not seeing for very long. And the problem with the screens, you know, I think Flight Falls is worse for it. But the problem with Flight Falls, because you're seeing things on screens, if you're not, you know, in the right car as you go past it, you know, you often like catch the tail end of it, or you go past it too quickly, and so you just listen to the audio. Do you know what I mean? Like it's really hard to sync up. And so I don't, when they first announced that that's what they were going to be doing with it, I was like, I don't think it's going to work. And it's proved that it doesn't really work. Like no one I've ever heard talk about that attraction talks about how good the video footage is, because you know you enjoy the ride for what it is, but the things that are supposed to be telling you the story are basically useless.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get a feel for any story at all on that attraction at all. Maybe it's just a really good, brilliant coaster. I mean, there was a little bit of theming.
Yeah,
but just a really good coaster. I mean, like I said, I really enjoyed it despite the relatively poor theming.
Yeah, I just don't know what the answer is. I just all I know is that what we've got currently isn't the answer. But I don't know how to make that better. But it needs something. You know what they've done so far just doesn't really do it justice. I mean, you obviously went on it before when it was Rock and Roller Coaster. I mean, that was just lighting rigs and flashy lights, wasn't it? That was it.
That was fine. It did feel like, I presume it was exactly the same roller coaster, with just different theming, I presume.
Yes, yeah. The actual, I mean, I think they replace a lot of the track, but the actual layout of the attraction is exactly the same. Yeah. So in that regard, everything that Rock and Roller Coaster did is still in this attraction.
And what I'll add is I struggled to get on it September because it kept breaking down.
Oh.
So, yeah, I got in the queue. I was literally at the door and they shut the ride down and it took them an hour to evacuate. And eventually they sent us away. And it was just incredibly difficult. So that may be part of the reason why the queues are bad at the moment, because it wouldn't surprise me if it's not deteriorating even further.
There you go. That's one other reason looking at it, but yeah. So, but you know, because you hadn't been there for so long, that was a whole new area to you. And obviously, there's been quite a few changes in the studios as well. So, was there anything else that you experienced that was new to you?
I think when I got off that attraction, I think they were doing the Spider-Man show or the superhero show on top of the roof.
Yep,
that was really good. I mean, to me, that's like classic Disney. There was loads of big crowd watching, so I watched that for a little bit. I went on Tower of Terror. That was another attraction that I used to always love when I used to come to Disney years ago with my daughter. And again, I was amazed by how good it still is. Like I don't know why I was expecting it. Maybe feel it wasn't as good as it used to be 10 years ago or whatever, but it was still a brilliant, brilliant attraction. Crash's Coaster, the queue was sort of 90 minutes or 95 minutes, so I just walked straight past that.
That's relatively short.
Yeah, but I mean, that wasn't a must-do attraction for me, so I wasn't too disappointed. I had a look in the Ratatouille area, but the ride itself was closed, but I had a look in the actual area. That's amazingly themed. That's brilliant. That's like, they've obviously spent a lot of time and money making that area. So I was really impressed by that, with all the small little market stalls.
That's exactly where Disneyland Paris should be looking for its inspiration for what they're doing in the future. If Arendelle doesn't look like that, I will not be happy. That's exactly what they should be looking at. And Avengers Campus, unfortunately, didn't follow those rules.
Yeah, but I mean, in that area as well, I mean, it was, even though the ride was closed, there was still lots of people just enjoying the atmosphere there, just sitting around, having a drink, having a look at the stalls. So it was really, obviously, people enjoyed the theming as much as the attraction.
And I think that's important. I mean, you know, I was quite surprised the first time I went there in how well, you know, considering the location of the park, right? The park is near Paris and they've created this little area which feels like you could be in Paris. Like, I think they did a really good job with doing it. And yeah, I think Paul's right with the theming of that versus Avengers Campus, in that, you know, that was realistic and done exceptionally well. And Avengers Campus just feels a little hodgepodgey to me. Doesn't really seem to know exactly what it's supposed to be. But yeah, I mean, you know, as you said, Arendelle's on the way, so that'll be interesting to see if, you know, which side of the fence it falls on. But yeah, the food stalls are really good, and that's something that they used to come out at Christmas, didn't they? But now a little bit like what they do in Epcot with Food and Wine, it's there most of the year. But they'll change
the menus. Expanding. It's not just there anymore.
No.
It's true. Now in the village and it's in Fantasyland.
It's in Fantasyland?
Yeah.
I've missed that.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, I've seen the stuff in the village. Again, that again used to be just a Christmassy thing, but now seems to be a bit more expansive. Did you get to see any of the shows in the studios?
No, I mean, I did plan to watch some of the shows just for sort of nostalgic reasons, if nothing else, and to get up with the sun, because it was very hot the whole time I was there. But again, the queues are just so massive, and actually, I did go to queue up for one of the shows. I can't remember which one it was, but there was a sign at the start saying next show was already full. And that was the case with all of the shows. There was people queuing for maybe 200 yards, 300 yards, perhaps even longer, just all the way down to the entrance of the, when they come out to the big buildings, the studio one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there was people queuing from one of the theatres all the way down to there, probably maybe, like I said, 200-300 yards of queue, if not more.
You really did go at the worst time.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, I mean, I had a little bit of flexibility when I was go as well, but I just thought, oh, end of September, that'll be quiet. Get to watch some rugby games as well at the same time, and well, didn't quite work out like that. But no, I had brilliant weather, so I wasn't too disappointed. And then because I was by myself as well, it would have been a lot more different if we'd have brought my daughter when she was young and it'd been so crowded. I'd imagine it'd be very difficult for anyone with children, especially small children, if they'd have gone to the park at the same time I went, with all the queues for everything.
Yeah.
And also, even just getting food, I mean, I should have really realised when I was trying to book a restaurant, I really struggled to book anywhere. Everything was booked up. Like, there wasn't, like, literally one time slot available. in any of the restaurants. I managed to get one in the Agrabah Cafe on the second day. That was the only and only slot I was able to get. And I looked constantly, almost on a daily basis, to try and get another restaurant for the first day, but there was literally no slots available. So I guess I should have.
I think that's just a constant, to be honest. I think the capabilities when it comes to restaurants are at times dire because there's such a lack of choice.
Yeah.
As well, it's not like walking into Walt Disney World and you've got 20 odd different restaurants in each park.
Yeah, I mean that's something I did pick up on was the when I went to Disney World with my daughter in 2017, I think it was, the meals or the eating is part of the holiday, if you like. Whereas in Disneyland Paris, that's not the case at all. I mean, you're just eating because you're hungry, really.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been watching the second season of Behind the Attraction on Disney Plus over the last week or so, and today's episode was about food. And the first thing I said was, I bet they don't go to Disneyland Paris.
And they did.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, so how? Because yeah, I mean, the thing with the restaurants, as well, like obviously, they have the booking system, but they always have some walk-in slots available. But the problem is if those, yeah, you get a queue for those as well. So you know you're queuing up, and you know you've got no idea whether you're actually going to get a table, or if they say, yeah, we can get you in, come back in an hour. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not ideal.
Yeah, but with regards to food anyway, I mean, I like I said, I was by myself, so I wasn't overly bothered. So, I mean, I brought like French bread in with me and sandwiches and just ate them in the sort of picnic areas. So that wasn't really too much of an issue. I just bought a cup of coffee as I was going around. That was my only real expenditure was the coffee and the beer later on in the evening.
It adds up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so it's not cheap buying a pint in Disney.
It's not, to be fair, it's not cheap buying a pint anywhere. I went out last week and I think I bought two pints and a short in London and it cost me almost 20 quid. So
Jesus.
It seems to be like a common problem.
Although I didn't realise, I think it's in the British bar, is it called, or the Royal Bar?
Yeah.
I think that they had a happy hour between 5 and 7, which is worth making a mental note.
Yes.
And that's directly opposite the big screen to watch football, so... That's actually what I did on the second day because, like I said, it was really hot, absolutely so crowded. I actually went back out and I sat on that bar for an hour or so watching rugby before I went back in just for the last push for the last couple of hours.
Yeah. Did you see any of the nighttime shows?
For one of my priorities, or one of the things I had to do, if you like, was to ride Thunder Mountain in the dark.
Ah, a good priority to have.
Yeah, so I timed my last evening or the second evening, which was my last evening in the end, to get in there. So I went in the queue around 7 o'clock, and the park closed at 9, I think it was, just as it was getting dark. Then the attraction went down then, so I was left in limbo about do I wait and hang around here, or do I go and do something else? But I did wait around for an hour near the entrance. And eventually they did open it back up and I got back on. And also I was the very first person on the train as well. So that was absolutely, absolutely brilliant. That was the last attraction I did of the trip. And it was the best probably. I mean, just to go on that attraction in the dark and to be the first in the first train was brilliant.
I do wonder sometimes, you know, cause me and Paul both go on about going on space Big Thunder Mountain in the dark. I do wonder sometimes it come across as like possibly a letdown when you do it, but I don't think it is. I think it's a great attraction during the day, but I do feel it's even better of a night when it starts to get dark and you see all the lights, you see the neon in the distance, you see Phantom Manor lit up. You know, I just think it's beautiful.
Oh yeah, it was amazing. It was well worth doing and planning an evening around just doing that attraction at least once in the dark.
Well, I'm glad our tips worked, I guess. but I guess the important question to kind of like, you know, as we get to the end of this, is, you know, this was your first trip, you know, in, you know, 8, 9, 10 years. How did it leave you feeling? Are you planning a future trip?
Oh yeah, definitely. I'd definitely go back to Disneyland Paris at some point. It might be actually going to Disneyland in California next year at some point as part of another trip. But, well, it may or may not happen. I'm not quite sure yet. But yeah, definitely. I mean, I plan to go to the Normandy beaches, you know, the D-Day landing sites maybe next year. So I possibly will call into Disney for a couple of days at the same time.
Do you think, based on your experience this time, and I mean with like the camper van, do you think you would do that again, or do you think you might look to stay somewhere else next time?
I probably would just stay in the camper van just because it's so much cheaper. Just the fact of €40, you're gonna have two nights there, so €80, and that probably wouldn't even get you a hotel room for one night. And I know we've got the issue of showering and stuff, but I'd probably just do a little bit of research and try and find some sort of shower facilities nearby, at least for one of the nights.
Yeah.
But it remains open what I do exactly, but I definitely would certainly consider the camper van option again, just purely because of the money saving.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't think you'd even get, what's the two hotels in Val d'Isère, Paul? What's the chain? Is it Ibis?
Yeah.
There's like an Ibis and like an Ibis Express. And the Ibis Express is supposed to be like their more discount one, even though they're pretty much on top of each other. And I think even there, I think you're probably looking at about, you know, the cheapest I've seen is probably about 60, 70 euros a night.
Yeah. So it's
double. Almost double what you're paying for the camper van.
Yeah, but I keep an eye on the situation regarding the showers and that type of thing. So hopefully they do decide to actually renovate those, not close them down.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's a handy thing. I think it's strange that there is no kind of option. Like, you know, they're happy for people to come in camper vans, but they're not happy to have facilities for that. Seems a bit bizarre. But you know, I think, you know, my takeaway from this is that, you know, you've gone back after a long time, you know, seen quite a few of the changes that they've made. And it sounds to me at least that you've kind of been bitten by the bug again.
So that's definitely. One thing is actually I will say for you guys and other similar podcasts is when I went back into the park on the second day into the Magic Kingdom park, I walked up one of the arcades on the right-hand side and just spent a good 20 minutes, half hour, just looking at all the detail. I walked down the Magic Kingdom street and did the same. I went back up the alley on the left-hand side, again, taking in all the detail. And that's something I've never done before.
They're beautiful. You know, I think I still would argue that Main Street USA at Disneyland Paris, although smaller, is probably more beautiful than Disney World's version. I didn't not like Disney World's version, but I just feel, especially when it's been kept up to date, it's beautiful. But those arcades down either side, which I think people discover by accident if they walk out the exit at the back of the shop sometimes. I don't think people always realize they're there, but they're great. You know, the gas lit lamps, and as you say, like the pictures on the wall, the whole decor, like they're just really well done. And it's also a great way of escaping. You know, if you don't, you know, if Main Street's busy, that's a good way of making your way up whilst avoiding the crowds, because they're normally much quieter in there as well. And it's a great place to stay if it's thundering down with rain, which often happens, right?
It'll always hold something special for me, because I was in the parks the day that Disneyland Paris was bought by the Walt Disney Company again, when they bought it outright. And I kind of sat in that arcade and kind of took it in. Mm. Like I was there on a day where still really hasn't taken hold, but it was a change for Disneyland Paris. So the future looked a bit brighter than it had done for a while. I sat on one of the benches and just kind of watched people go by and just contemplated what had happened. And it will always hold something special for me for that reason. And they're superb. And I will always take time out of my day to just take a seat and take the day in while I'm there.
And another thing as well, just to point out to any listeners, is that's worth doing, but I thought it was. And I don't think I went on this, maybe my last two trips 10, 15 years ago, whatever it was the train that goes around the park.
Yes.
I mean, I really enjoyed that. That was excellent, just to see the park from a different view. And at some point, I think it might be in the Fantasyland area, we actually saw some of the characters just sort of standing there behind the wall. So they all waved up to the train, which is great. I don't think there wasn't a single person on that train who wasn't waving back to the characters, adults and children.
No, it's an underrated thing. I mean, it was down for quite a while, wasn't it? I want to say a good two or 3 years, Paul.
Yeah, it literally, all that time I was an annual pass holder, I think I got on it twice. because it was never open.
No. Well, they were doing a lot of work on it, but yeah, I think it's an underrated thing, which, I mean, people are obviously aware it's there because the train makes noise and, you know, you walk underneath the station. But yeah, I think it's overlooked. And actually, I would also say, and I mean, obviously, this doesn't happen all year round as well, but also when they've got the riverboats out, you know, going on that, it's not as exciting as the train. You're only obviously going around that lake around Frontierland. But if you just want to kind of like chill out and, you know, not be going on attractions and, you know, you just want to spend 20, 30 minutes just wanting to look at things, that's also a good thing to do as well. If they're running.
Yeah, because I don't know if it's always been the case, but on the train, you could actually see some of the Pirates of the Caribbean, right?
It's, you don't see the ride, but you go through some caves which are basically similar to what you see in the attraction. But I'm fairly sure
you can actually see down actually into the attraction. I could be wrong.
I think you can. I think you can see Barbossa.
Oh, there you go. I just always just assumed it was themed to look like Pirates of the Caribbean.
No, I think what the thing was, there wasn't a scene there previously until they added Barbossa.
Right.
Now when you go through it, you can actually see him when he changes from human to skeleton.
That's another attraction as well, which I got the Pirates of the Caribbean. That's an absolutely brilliant, brilliant attraction.
Yeah, I think since since that's been refreshed as well, and weirdly, it's also an attraction which normally has refurb on it every year. If you go in January, do not expect that attraction to be open. That's normally the month that they close it to refurb it. But when everything's working and stuff, it's a stunning attraction. And going back to what you were saying earlier, Paul, about the animatronics on Phantom Manor looking so kind of crisp, I do think that's the same with Pirates. I don't think they look tired at all on that attraction anymore.
Yeah, it brings back nostalgic feelings when you're walking down into that, into where the boats are, and you get the smells and you can hear the music and everything. It's brought back so many memories.
Yeah, I think it's that combination of the music and the smell. You're right. There's just something about it that, it always brings back past memories as well to me.
I always expect there to be pirates in the jail cells. one of these days, there's going to be someone in one of them. I know it.
Yeah, that's actually one thing as well that the cast members in Paris are a lot, they were excellent. I mean, I had no complaints because I know people do complain sometimes with the cast members in Paris compared to the US parks, but all the cast members are excellent, but they definitely don't get involved as much as in America. They're definitely a lot more European, reserved compared to the US cast members.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. That's a spot on way of looking at them. Yeah, I think people mistake reservedness for rudeness quite often. I'm not saying at all that there won't be rude cast members, or there won't be times when that's not the case. But I do think, especially people that have been to Walt Disney World and experienced the cast members there, it's a completely different thing. But I think it's just more, just French, just how the nation, deal with things. And to be honest, I quite like it in a way, because I want it to feel authentic.
Mm.
You know, I think I actually feel sometimes when you can be in American parts, and Disney's the worst one for this. Like, I don't think you get this quite so much in Universal, but you get it to an extent. But I feel sometimes it can come across as trying too hard, like as being a bit false.
Yeah, I think the only or the best cast member, I think, was on the Tower of Terror. He really got into character. The guy who puts you on the lift, and he was excellent. Just to give him a shout out, didn't catch his name, but he was he really played the part really well.
Yeah, I would say that is probably the exception to the rule in terms of that. Although I would say Phantom Manor. So maybe it's something to do with spooky rides. They put a bit.
So
more
it gives you in. It gives you a lot of scope to play up to it, I suppose. It's a lot easier, I guess, to act as a ghost or a ghoulish figure rather than a cowboy, maybe, I suppose.
Well, we've had it on Phantom Manor before, where when you're supposed to look up when the lightning crashes and stuff, and then you kind of, after you've seen that and that goes away, you then kind of put your head back down again. I've certainly experienced it a couple of times where the cast member is then standing in front of you. Not standing in front of you, but standing in front of you, like your wife, who then like goes, because they weren't expecting someone to be there staring at them. So they do. I think those attractions especially, they do have a bit more fun. I think in general it's just a more reserved nation and a more reserved way of doing things. And I don't think it's wrong. But I can understand why people might find it a bit odd if they've been to other parks first. I think, for me, Disneyland Paris was my first Disney experience. So I didn't know anything else. So I think, depending on which order you've gone to these parks, you may feel differently. But yeah, for me, it's what I knew. So I've always kind of come to expect it, really.
Yeah. But I think they integrate the French language into most of the attractions very well, to the point you don't really notice it. I think the only attraction actually which I felt the French was very noticeable was the Star Tours attraction, because for me Star Wars is an English speaking film. So to hear what's his name, C-3PO talking in French just didn't quite seem right. Whereas in most of the other attractions, it didn't really make a difference. So actually, if anything, in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, I think actually the French is better.
Yes.
Just adds a bit of mystique to it.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because I agree with you on that, especially on Pirates. I think the problem with, and I would say the two that stand out to me are both because they're film franchises, but it's the Marvel attractions and Star Wars, because you're used to hearing a certain voice in a certain tone. And obviously the actors that will revoice those characters for the French market often don't sound like them. So I remember when I went on Spider-Man for the first time and I saw French Tom Holland, and I was like,
that's very bizarre watching Tom Holland speaking French.
You know what I mean? It's really weird.
And the fact that they put English subtitles underneath them.
Yes.
It's my favourite.
Yeah, I mean, one of the common complaints I do see about Disneyland Paris is the fact that it's too French. But I also think, well, hang on, it's in France.
Yeah,
being what you expect.
I didn't find that at all, to be honest with you. I didn't think so.
My biggest issue is when they have one character speak English and one speak French.
Oh, like,
and you're meant to understand the conversation. Yeah, they're meant to understand their conversation. Like, normally Mickey's French and Minnie's English.
Yeah.
I find that incredibly strange.
I just pick
one or the other.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Just have Peter Pan and Wendy speak English and Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse speak French. It's fine. You can't. I mean, this is something you can do, Kieran, on a future trip. When you go on Star Tours, you can ask the cast member about the possibility of doing it in English. Tower of Terror, you can do that as well. And it will all depend on the cast member, the people that you're with, and their mood that day, if I'm honest. But I've done Star Tours.
I was tempted to ask, but there was just so many, there was very few or relatively few English-speaking people there. Was mostly Spanish was probably the next most spoken language there, apart from French.
And
so,
I
was tempted to ask, but I thought, you know, it didn't spoil the experience. Still a great experience. So,
and I think the cast members generally play the room. So if you ask if you can have it in English and they realise you're the only English person in the whole group, they probably won't. But if you're there with quite a few English people that just happen to be there and they hear that, then they quite often do. You know, it's... What I'm pointing out is something that they can do. But yeah, and in fact, I've done Star Tours before when it's been in English, and I think it's just because they've noticed who was going on the attraction and just thought, I'll just put it in English anyway. So yeah, they do have those modes, which I find quite interesting, because I guarantee that, like, Disney World doesn't have that. I don't think they have Star Tours in Portuguese, for example, even though there's a larger Brazilian audience that they have. But
that's one of the things where if the crowd hadn't been so big, I'd have possibly gone back in a quieter moment and asked for it in English. But just, it was just consistently from 9 o'clock in the morning or 10 when it opened to, I think it was 9, it closed in the evening. It was just consistently jam-packed.
Yeah It's unfortunate that you went at such a busy period, but I think a lesson there, that if you're thinking of booking out of season, just because it's out of season for us doesn't mean it's necessarily out of season for the rest of Europe. So, you know,
let's look at those holidays. Yeah, definitely lesson learned in that respect.
Paul, was there anything else you wanted to...
I think we've covered everything. It's been great to see a different side of not only... a first trip in a long time, but also kind of a different way of doing it as well. And I think that's been fantastic. So thank you, Kieran.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on the show.
No, it's been brilliant. Thank you. And by all means, if you do make it out next year, then you know where we are. We'd like to have you back on. So
I'm listening closely to Paul's podcast about Disneyland in California to try and pick up some tips as they go along.
Yeah, well, we're trying. That's what we're trying to do with it, to be honest. So, yeah, if you haven't, check out Disneyland After Dark. We're actually on video as well.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. I was when you said you were going to be on Zoom tonight, I was wondering, do I need to find a background?
No, you're good. It's only because that's like one a month and we're still testing the waters with it. We're there talking Disneyland. The first episode went out last month about how to get to Disneyland from the UK. Because it's not the easiest thing to do.
No, I've realised that myself. Well, I mean, I'm going to be in Nashville next year, so I'm trying to get from Nashville to LA, possibly, depending on work and a few other things. But,
It's doable. Not horrendously easy, but it's certainly doable. Helps that you're in the country.
Yeah.
There is that.
Yeah.
But no,
I'll keep you guys updated.
No, please do. And, you know, if you are planning to visit any other different theme parks, let us know. Maybe we need to start another podcast for Thought Park After Dark, Europa Park After Dark.
I'm probably going to Australia the year after next, so I don't know if I'm going to stop off possibly in Hong Kong. I think they've got a Disney park there, haven't they?
They have. And I can recommend you an Australian Disney podcast. Our friends over at Diz Down Under. I was going to say Diz After Dark. Diz Down Under. They have they're an Australian based podcast, and I think they are actually planning to go to maybe Hong Kong and possibly Tokyo next year or in the near future. I know they're talking about it again at the moment because of where they are, their nearest parts are Shanghai, Hong Kong, and Tokyo. So not exactly near to Australia, but not too far away either. But Kieran, it's been great to have you on. Thank you so much for telling us about your trip, and as Paul said, hearing about another way of doing a Disneyland trip if people are thinking of such a thing. And look, listeners, we've got to apologize. We've slacked off a little bit, so we'll get the October episode out now. And then me and Paul, I'm sure, will be back later on in November to talk about all the news that's happened over the last 8 weeks, because there's been quite a lot.
As always, you think it's going to be quiet, and then it's not.
You plan holidays, you take time off, and then it just all blows up in your face. So, yes, we will see you for another episode very soon.
Au revoir.
Cheers, guys.
Podcast is a That production and part of the After Dark Podcast Network.